Welcome to Business Day Spotlight. I'm your host, Dise Tsomotsweneng, and today we have a remarkable guest who is shaping the financial landscape. She's a driving force behind Absa's impactful initiatives. With a keen eye on environmental, social, and governance factors, Bunki has been instrumental in shaping Absa's commitment to sustainable finance. Please join me in welcoming Bunki Modisa. Bunki, thank you for being here with us today. Let's dive into your journey and uncover the secrets behind responsible finance. So to start, Bunki, just tell me what is your approach? What is Absa's approach to sustainable finance?
Yeah, so I think, Absa's approach, I'd say, is more broad, if anything. I think our approach broadly, I would say, starts with really talking to stakeholders and understanding what is important, to them. So after having gotten an understanding of what is, important to them, and then how do we, therefore, on the back of that, think about prioritization. So to that effect, I think we've got a holistic, in an integrated strategy from an Absa perspective. And I would say, I think how it all came about also is we understand, I think, where, the world is at, because broadly the world is transitioning towards a low carbon economy. So within that context, as an organization, we therefore had to think about what is our role, given the centrality, I think, of banking in some of these issues, particularly in issues of economic development. So within that space, I think we realized that sustainability needs to be, I think, the underpin for everything that we do in the organization. So therefore, in that context, one of our five strategic objectives is that of being an active force for good in everything that we do, which broadly, I think, contributes to our overall purpose of empowering Africa's tomorrow together, one story at a time. In that context, I think we aim to create, value across generations, by actively managing our impact on the environment, making meaningful contributions also to communities that we serve, and also upholding, the highest standard of governance and ethics. So as such, I think our strategy therefore integrates, in my mind, sustainability objectives to create a positive future, for the continent, because we really want to be, I think, one of the leaders in financial services within the continent. So in that context, therefore, to settle, our sustainability framework prioritizes, financial inclusion, diversity and inclusion and climate. And then, we align all of these aspects with our purpose and also drive, our sustainability framework in that regard, supported to a greater extent, I think, by good corporate governance and citizenship. So all of these actions, I think, for us, they ensure that, our decisions that we make on an ongoing basis, they support the overall sustainability goals. Hopefully that gives you some sense of how we've thought about this from an organization.
Definitely. The South African energy market is opening up, it's in the middle of opening up with the breakup of Eskom. I know it's sustainable finance, but at the end of the day, it's also business. You have to make money out of it. So what role do you see Absa playing there? And could you also touch on the commercial aspects of it? How does Absa make money off of it?
You can't ask Lexi for that kind of a question.
All right.
So I think first of all, this is the key thing for us is that, you know, we think about, you know, sustainability from a just transition perspective. So just transition, you know, is basically, I think our approach is grounded, you know, in our commitment to a sustainable future, like I've just mentioned, you know, and to a greater extent, we have to balance, I think, the, you know, environmental, you know, stewardship, particularly, you know, in line with South Africa's also development needs in the process. So our net zero, I think, declaration, which we went out publicly with last year sometime, largely reflects, I think, our dedication to supporting clients and communities, you know, transitioning to, you know, this net zero economy, while also ensuring, you know, that access to renewable energy, you know, and also, you know, fostering, I think, sustainable and inclusive growth. So in that regard, then, you know, our efforts therefore extend to promoting the adoption of these new, you know, energy vehicles and applying, I think, rigorous due diligence, you know, to ensure that, you know, our financing practices contribute positively to, you know, our sustainability objectives. So my sense is that in that process, as we navigate this journey towards net zero, we recognize the importance of inclusivity and equity, and we are committed at the same time, I think, to managing the complex, you know, transition, you know, in collaboration, I think, with diverse stakeholders across the continent, while ensuring that, you know, no one is going to be left behind in the process. So in my view, I think this inclusive approach is therefore essential, you know, as we mitigate some of the risks and also maximize opportunities for all our stakeholders, largely in pursuit, you know, of a sustainable future for all. So we have, you know, as you might know, positioned ourselves as a leader, I think, in renewable energy, in financing the process. And that, to a greater extent, I think is exemplified, you know, by, you know, some of the milestones that I would say we've achieved as an organization. One being that in 2019, you know, we issued our first green bond. And also, you know, we made substantial, I think, investments in renewable energy platforms, particularly here in South Africa. So if you look at the REAP program, as an example, I mean, we've got about 55%, you know, market share or participation in that program. So to a greater extent, I think those are some of the initiatives that we continue to do, because we recognize that we have a responsibility, I think, support clients and the capital markets, you know, in scaling up investments that align, I think, ultimately to sustainability goals.
If I could, just on that, so can you provide maybe insight into your progress on towards 100 billion rand sustainable financing target for 2025? Are there any specific sectors that you or projects driving these achievements? I mean, you did mention renewable energy. You are big on that, but is there any more insights you can provide? Where are you with that target, maybe?
So I would say we've broadly made a lot of progress as far as the target is concerned. So if you look at, you know, our report at the end of last year, you know, we already indicated, I think that we are about 89 billion, we've achieved about 89 billion you know, in funding. Obviously, some of it, I think, was fortuitous, purely from a point of view that, you know, we had load shedding as a big challenge in South Africa. So therefore, you found that, you know, there was a surge in demand, I think, for sustainable or renewable energy, you know, sources. So in that regard, that accelerated, I think, also our journey in terms of the achievements within that 100 billion. But as I said, I mean, we also are a key player, I think, in South Africa's evolving energy landscape, particularly the renewable energy. I think we've established, you know, our presence as one of South Africa's leading financiers in renewable energy, you know. So, you know, committing, I think, significant resources to support the RIP. Actually, I think we supported, if I remember, about 43 projects in this space. And, you know, since I think its inception, we did mobilize, to my earlier point, about 90 billion. So 89, I think, 0.8 to be exact was the number, contributing to the development of, you know, over 4,000 megawatts of clean energy infrastructure in the process. I think we also achieved, I think, 80%, you know, of the 100 billion. Mobilization target, you know, for sustainable finance. And I think that commitment for us, you know, includes specific targets, you know, for wind and solar energy, you know, financing. At the same time, I think we've managed to, I would say, demonstrate leadership, you know, in advancing in our own operations, you know, towards zero carbon, you know, energy system. So I think on a going forward basis, our goal is broadly to continue driving innovation and sustainability in energy financing, supporting to a greater extent, I think, the country's transition to cleaner and more resilient energy solutions. So to your question on Eskom, you know, with the unbundling of Eskom, I think the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill and also the Market Code and Market Operator launch in 2026. My sense is therefore that as an organization, we are poised, I think, to expand our role in the private generation market, largely focusing on funding the IPPs, you know, independent power producers, and also I would say energy traders and aggregators and associated technologies like batteries and also, you know, transmission energy. So this is a space that we are really staying fairly close to because we do believe that, you know, for us, I think as a country to sustainably, you know, develop and also drive economic growth, create jobs, it is imperative, you know, for us to play a key role in this space.
Yeah. What's the demand like in this market? I mean, I know, I mean, would it be fair to say you are seeing booming demand? You are turning back some people? Is that would that be fair? Could you give me a bit of color as to what is that like?
Yeah, so maybe let me start by you know, creating a picture for you from a global perspective. You know, in terms of just the overarching you know, transition. So if you look globally, most of, especially financial services, you know, have announced significant, you know, funding in this space. So I think it's in trillions of dollars. So I don't even know how to write those numbers, but when you read them, they're quite scary numbers. But what you're finding is that in that, you know, the projects that become bankable, you know, are fairly small, you know, relative to the funding that's been availed, I think, for the transition. So the issue really is bankability, you know, of the projects. But we are seeing, you know, improvements beginning to come through in terms of, you know, projects that can be effectively, you know, bankable. But I think also what, you know, spurs demand also is just how quickly regulation, you know, shifts. So when you look at the sustainability space, I think there's really I think three core things that need to happen, particularly from a bank point of view. Firstly, is that, you know, policy needs to lead. So there has to be a policy shift, because policy shift then starts to drive, you know, our clients, you know, to want to respond to the policy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when our clients, you know, respond, and then from our side, we respond through financing. So we almost like the last mile, know, in this whole process. So then to effectively answer your question then around the demand, we are seeing demand, you know, in South Africa. Most of the demand was obviously generated by some of the challenges that we had around load shedding. Mm. And I think people realize that they can't put, I think, a crisis to waste in the process. So they really are taking on, I think, these new capabilities. So demand, we're seeing it. But I would say it's not to the extent that you would love, you know, to see it in the process, particularly given the emergency, you know, of on climate change, you know, challenge. So, I mean, the demand that we also are seeing is we're beginning to see also individual clients, you know, wanting to participate more and more in this space. And also, interestingly, you're finding that, you know, capacity building. So people want to understand a lot more. So there's an element of curiosity also, you know, around the issues of climate change and how, you know, individual clients can contribute, you know, towards also creating sustainable economies. So my sense is, you know, we are seeing demand beginning to surge. Obviously, there's you know, politics also come to the mix. And we're keenly watching the events in the US in particular, you know, given that we know that, you know, Republicans are not, you know, the favorites when it comes to issues of sustainability. But we'll watch with keen interest as to what, you know, is going to happen in that space. But my sense is, you know, the goalpost or the ball has started to roll. So if anything, it will continue, I think, to roll, particularly, I think, given that in Europe, to a greater extent, I think Europe takes issues of sustainability seriously. And for us as a country, they are a big, you know, trading partner. So it's going to be important, therefore, for us to follow through. Because what you can see, you know, in Europe is that they are pushing very much now for sustainable value chains. And because we play in that space and we want to preserve and protect jobs, I think, as a country, it is important for us, therefore, you know, to shift accordingly.
Yeah, which takes me to this point, Punki, about the tension between between climate goals and energy access, particularly on the African continent, where you've got a as APSA, you've got a big presence. Have you? I know some banks have cut off funding for oil, for thermal coal, new thermal coal mines, and new oil and gas exploration. Where does APSA stand in this debate? I mean, have you also cut off any?
You know, when we started the conversation, I spoke a fair bit maybe about, you know, our approach to just decisions. So our decisions here are largely grounded in support of just energy transition. So that effect, I think our approach to oil and gas, you know, if you look at our targets that we've communicated, really reflects our strategic view that, you know, gas serves as a crucial transition fuel in the process, vital largely for ensuring grid stability as we navigate, you know, towards greater renewable energy penetration. So for us, I think as an organization, we recognize the role of gas in facilitating a just transition. particularly in regions heavily reliant on fossil fuels. So our targets are therefore designed, I think, with the understanding that gas can be sourced more responsibly, and it plays a pivotal role in reducing methane emissions. So therefore, I think as we're setting, you know, our targets, we therefore, you know, set them on an intensity-based, you know, targets for both oil and gas. And we aim to incentivize, I think, cleaner energy transition while supporting the evolution of technology towards sustainable energy solutions. And then if you look at coal, I think on the coal piece, you know, our coal funding approach also follows a balanced, I would say, strategy that meets, you know, the global imperatives to transition, you know, to cleaner energy sources, while also addressing, I think, you know, South Africa or the markets, I think, where we are keeping that, you know, we've got presence in other markets in the continent, you know, ongoing challenges, energy challenges that they face.
All right. I mean, I think that covers some of the questions that I had for you, Punki. Is there anything that maybe you would like to add that I forgot to ask before we conclude?
I think for me, this is the most important thing is really that balance in this space is very important. And it's balance of, you know, the environment as well as social, you know, economic, I would say, improvement, particularly because also when you look at, you know, matters of sustainability and in particular, you know, climate, you know, there is a, you know, global carbon or finite, I would say, global carbon budget on the, I think, of achieving, you know, net zero emissions. So, yes, the agency, I think, of immediate action to mitigate climate change is clear, and delays, you know, could necessitate maybe more drastic and challenging measures in future. So that's why when you look at, you know, our commitment as an organization, it broadly, I think, aims to proactively mitigate any potential negative consequences for our clients, and in particular for society, I think, at large. So, yeah, I think that for me, that is maybe one of the most important things, you know, to say that as an organization, I think we will continue to play a part in addressing climate change in particular, in line with the commitments, you know, that we've communicated out there, but also, you know, be responsive and agile, you know, to the changing circumstances. And hence, even when you look at our overarching strategy, I think our strategy largely takes into account, you know, short-term, medium-term, as well as long-term implications.
Yeah. All right. All right. Actually, I've almost forgot this question. Sorry. So the Sunday Times carried an article this weekend about nuclear. Where do you stand on that? I mean, is that the kind of energy that you would put your money on? It is expensive, but it's also very, very clean.
I think you have to look at, you know, the successes that a country like Japan has managed to achieve. I think Japan at this point in time, you know, I'm using extreme language now, they're not really concerned about trying to transition, you know, because they adopted nuclear at a fairly, you know, young stage. So I think if you take that into account, definitely I think nuclear personally for me is a part of the solution. And to your point, it is costly. But if I look at the past COP, you know, because it was a financing COP, there were lots of conversations around nuclear, you know, as a solution to sustainability and climate change related issues. And I think a lot of the developed countries are considering nuclear as a solution. And my sense is that the more of the developed countries adopt nuclear as a solution, in time, you'll find that it becomes a lot more cheaper, given economies of scale.
Yes.
But at this point in time, it's prohibitively expensive, but it is a solution, one of the tools that can be used to strengthen. And it's a lot more also, I would say, reliable, relative to renewable energy that's, relies to a greater extent on wind or availability of the sun, etc. So, I think I would support, nuclear energy. And also my understanding is that, once it's developed, it's clean and it's also a cheaper sort of energy on an ongoing basis. But to build it, that's where the biggest challenge is.
And South Africa is broke at the moment. All right. Punki, thank you very much for your time. I'm really grateful. I hope we can meet in person. I was hoping that you will come to studio, but it is very cold. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks also from my side.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Day Spotlight. If you enjoyed today's episode with Punki Modisa, don't miss out on more insightful conversations. I've been your host, DZ Tsomotsweni.